if you're coming to Chicago this spring or summer and you feel stuck in your improv and you feel like, you know what, I'm just doing the same scenes over and over again and I want a new approach to improv. I want to make it fun again. I want to make it easy again. Well, then I would love it if you would think about taking my Art of Slow Comedy Summer Weekend Intensives. Now, I'll be offering them only twice this summer, July 27th through the 28th, or the weekend of August 10th through the 11th. What we work on is slowing stuff down so you can find the game easier, connecting with your partner. You get all your information from your partner about your scene work. You don't have to, like, put so much pressure. You know, when they say, oh, I'm in my head, well, focusing on your partner helps you get out of your head. And they've got all sorts of clues, even when they're not speaking. And also, before you can be funny, you need to be real. So once you start to relax, just like when you're in a party and you're relaxed or you're with friends and you're hanging out and you're so funny and so spontaneous, same rules apply in the Art of Slow Comedy. So for more information to sign up for the Art of Slow Comedy Summer Intensive, the weekend of July 27th or July 28th or August 10th through 11th here in Chicago at Stage 773, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. Also, this is the first time that I'm going to be offering an advanced level two-person scene tune-up one-day workshop here in Chicago. If you feel like, you know what, I need work on my two-person scenes because that's the foundation of any long form you do, because no clever edits or walk-ons or forms are going to save you. It comes down to doing good two-person scenes. So think about it. If you're looking for feedback in your work, if you've been improvising for a long time, you're like, I just haven't gotten direction. I feel lost. I feel I need some help. Check out my workshop. That's June 1st, the Advance Two-Person Scene Tune-Up One-Day Workshop. It's Stage 773. For more information, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Blair.
I'm Taylor.
And we're the Crowd Theater.
And you're listening to Improv Nerd with Jimmy Corain.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Hey, everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another great episode of Improv Nerd. It's great to be back. I missed you guys. I missed doing this podcast. We'll talk about my sabbatical in just a second. Our guests today are the founders of the Crowd Theater in Chicago, Blair Britt, Dylan Cassidy, and Taylor Jones. And these guys have a mission, and their mission in their theater is to be all-inclusive. So we talk to them about how they've gone about accomplishing this mission, how they met, and how they decided to form a theater. We also talked to them about chicken wings. It is good to be back. I feel a little rusty. I feel it took me a while just to set up this microphone and work GarageBand, so I'm a little foggy with this. I don't think our last episode was it was in October, I believe, and we actually recorded this episode, I think, in the fall. So I just wanted to be full disclosure because, you know, I come from a public radio background. I got tired of doing the podcast. It just wasn't fun anymore. And so I took a long break and hopefully I'll be releasing some more episodes this spring and summer. But I was like, it takes a lot of work to do this. And I'm trying to come up with a system where I don't have to do so much work because I put a lot of prep into the interviews. I do a lot of research, which maybe I don't need to even do. But, and, you know, I'm a perfectionist. So this intro, this little story, I'm going to have to probably record this a couple times before I feel it's good enough to record. Or maybe this is good enough to record. So I'm going to say right now it's good enough to record. So here it is, Blair Britt, Dylan Cassidy, and Taylor Jones. This is the Crowd Theater episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
We're talking to Dylan Cassidy, Taylor Jones, and Blair Britt, who founded the Crowd Theater in Chicago back in October 2015. This is your third year anniversary. You all three are in your late 20s, and you studied at IO Chicago and CIC. Dylan, tell us how you all met.
That's fun. We actually all met at an improv festival in college at USC when, I guess that would have been like 2012, I think. Definitive memories of meeting Blair Taylor and I know that we were both there, but I don't necessarily remember meeting each other.
Yeah, no.
Is that true? Is that true?
I don't remember meeting Dylan either.
But we were both there, so yeah. We probably saw each other. Mm-hmm. But Blair and I definitely had a conversation about having intentions to move to Chicago. So we got connected also when we got here through a program that called the Chicago Improv League.
Yes, very cool. Mm-hmm.
And then Blair, what was your goals when you came to Chicago? What did you want to do?
When I first moved out to Chicago.
Where were you from where?
I went to school at University of Colorado.
Okay.
And so back when I was in college, I took Second City's like comedy studies program, which is like sort of a semester abroad, but you just do it in Chicago and you take comedy classes. And so I did that for one semester in my junior year. And when I moved back to Colorado for my senior year, I just sort of had decided a buddy of mine and I were both just going to move to Chicago after we were done with college. And we just wanted to kind of dive into the improv scene. So when I got out to Chicago, I like pretty quickly enrolled in, I had taken some annoyance classes when I was out here in college. So I continued taking those classes when I was here. And then, just started like jumped into taking a bunch of classes. And I think the big thing I noticed when I moved out here was just I did a bunch of bar prov back in the day.
When bar prov was a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so I was sort of like, I think I got there right at the end of its heyday where like there were so many different bars and you could literally play at a bar sometimes two times a night. There would be like an 8 p.m. show at one bar and then a 10 p.m. show at another. And I would do probably like four or five shows a week, every single week, even having only lived out here for 2 or 3 months or something.
So Taylor, what brought you to Chicago?
Similar thing. So the guy who was like the manager of my college improv team, his brother started Blair's college improv team. And so that's like how we got to know each other, because we'd go to like a festival and so I knew Blair.
And what college was that?
Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Which is in?
It's a California state school on the Central Coast. And so like I knew Blair, and somebody on my team went to the same comedy studies and went to Chicago, and just one night, like after college, a couple months I had been living with my parents, and I was kind of like, this is not great. And I was like at a party with one of my other college improv friends, and we were like drinking, and we were like, wouldn't it be fun if we moved to Chicago? That'd be so crazy. And then like the next morning we were like more sober, and we're like, that's still a pretty good idea. And then we took off. I got here maybe like a month after Blair, and mostly just to like try something new and get out of California, and which is not a thing most people say, but just to pursue improv.
So then you guys, you study at I.O., you're on a Herald team in I.O., you do CIC, and then you study there as well. And then Dylan comes up to you and he asks you, he approaches both you guys and says, I want to start a theater. And Dylan, what was your vision of that theater when you approached Blair and Taylor?
I think this is pretty close to it. We wanted to create a space that people that might not have fit in at the other places could feel comfortable, and create like a really community-focused, artist-driven space that doesn't necessarily chew people up as much as some of the other spaces might.
And Blair, you said that part of your goal in starting the theater was to escape some of the rigid hierarchies at the more established theaters. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Kind of my whole experience in Chicago had been, especially when we had started the theater, is that like I felt successful in the scene, but it felt like it had taken a long time to have to like prove that to a number of people. And I think something that we, all three of us, were very into the idea of is like immediate like performance access. And so one of the things we wanted was for this to just be a place where like we didn't care how long you'd been in Chicago, we didn't care how much training you'd gone through. This is a place where you can just come, get on stage, do shows, and like start getting better as a performer before, we're not going to make you go through like a year and a half of classes before we think you're ready to be on stage.
And Taylor, one of your missions, and it's the whole mission of the Crowd Theater, is to support improvisers of color. Now, you guys are three white guys in your 20s. Mm-hmm. Why is that mission important to you?
I think it's important because, I mean, it's just like a thing that has not been a priority. Especially when we were coming through, was not a priority at most of the other theaters. Like, it wasn't and you'd go to shows and you'd see, like, you know, all white teams constantly. And the big lesson learned for me, or like the big learning moment for me, was I was on a team with Lauren Walker, who's a woman of color, and she was on my Herald team, and she ended up quitting because it was like not fun to be on a team where her voice was, she was like the only woman of color. Oh no, her and Atra Asdu were the two women of color, and she just didn't feel like people really respected her voice as a woman of color, and like when she bring up things from her childhood that they weren't resonating, and it was because like nobody really gave that a lot of focus. And so that was kind of like an eye-opening experience for me, where like I was definitely like felt like part of the problem, sort of just like not having that focus. And so I think that like talking to her and like learning from her about like what her experience was made me realize like it's not great that we have these institutions that are built on like a community, right? And like saying yes and being very welcoming, but then there's like a whole section of people that actually don't feel welcome, and it seems like people don't realize that.
So what is the crowd doing to accomplish this?
Well, we have a number of initiatives apart from, as three white men, we are very cognizant of trying to bring more people that we're trying to represent into our leadership, because I think for us, we've always thought of it as like a top-down thing is necessary for any real sort of impact to happen. But we do have some programming, but I'll let one of these guys take some of that too.
Oh yeah, I think one of our first big moves was when we were first bringing the co-op was an organization, sort of like a performance opportunity where people can pay like $40 essentially to be part of this performance group where we take the whole group of people, we mash everybody up and we put them on teams, and then you do like five or six shows over the course of 3 months. And so that was one of our earliest like performance opportunities at the crowd, and we wanted that to kind of be our flagship like program we were working on. And when we first were doing like the first round of signups for that, we in the signups we had like a self-identification section, and we had people sort of identify or show us how they identify within the performance community. And we found that the numbers were like way lower than we wanted them to be in terms of like, you know, we were trying to promote diversity, and it turns out we had a, you know, somewhere around like 90% white performers in our first like list of people who had applied. And so one of the things, and this was back when Lauren Walker was working with us as part of the board, but one of the initiatives we came up with, and this has stayed true in the co-op since then, but we wanted to waive the membership fee for performers of color as a way of just giving more opportunity, especially to people who maybe haven't done improv before and just kind of want to like try it out and get experience, or and just having like an easier access point for specifically performers of color in the scene.
And then we also prioritized like giving slots to performers of color and members of LGBTQ community, and prioritizing them and making sure that we were like prioritizing diversity, and also like people who identified as women got priority over men as well.
Yeah, so the co-op's always been, we would get, you know, 250 people signing up and then essentially decide what of those 250 people would actually make it to the performance groups. And so we've always made sure that that is, the, you know, as diverse as possible when we're approaching that particular program. And then outside of that, we also just like in our, you know, week-to-week schedule, we put priority on booking shows with, you know, diverse casts with specific perspectives mm-hmm. represented in them. And it's been nice too, because like when we first started out, Lauren was instrumental in just like helping us like essentially get a very diverse community right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And we pretty quickly just had access to, you know, producers, performers, people all over the place who wanted to do shows at our theater because we were, you know, more affordable. We wanted to give people opportunity, and we didn't necessarily put like a block on anybody because they don't have enough experience, or you know, we weren't sure how their shows were going to go down.
And you're shaking your head, Dylan. What did you want to add something to this?
Oh, I'm just agreeing. well, I'm thinking about also we've talked about Lauren here, but I would feel bad if we don't also mention Ashley, who was a big part of our theater for a year and a half.
Yeah, absolutely.
and helped fill in a lot of those same needs, and just was an absolute workhorse for us, and we love her to death.
Yeah.
She brought in a ton of performers of color into the fold, and like, and was instrumental in getting people slots and getting performers.
And what do you think about, for you guys, giving people of color that opportunity? How has that impacted the Chicago community in terms of diversity?
I think that there has been, definitely there's been a shift in priority, I think, overall in the scene. And I mean, it'd be wonderful to take credit for that, but I think it's just generally the zeitgeist of the times is waking up a little bit to some of the issues.
Yeah, I think exactly that. Like, sort of the whole community has shifted, and I think, like Dylan said, it'd be great if we could take credit for it, but I think in reality what practically happened was that it was something that we decided to start paying attention to really specifically, and I think it slowly became something that the rest of the community eventually, arrived upon that same exact decision.
Or are still coming around to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And how much more work has to be done with this? I mean...
I definitely would say it is more work, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think it's something you accomplish. I think it's a way of approaching programming and decision making from like a business end that is constant. Like, mm-hmm. it's just about being more thoughtful about every aspect of what you're doing.
Yeah, I think it involves like getting more people of color in leadership roles and paid positions so that they can be like a guiding force in and like have like the positions of power in the community to make change. And I think really it's like the work is done when like people of color feel fully comfortable and like that they have like, I don't know. Yeah. It's more about like how they feel, not,
you know, I have to,
is a number.
I have to say this cause we're four white guys,
sure,
you
yeah.
know? So it would be interesting to see what people of color, how they feel now about the improv community, mm-hmm. you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's something. Yeah, you have to ask, and I mean, I think, like as white men, it's like you have to listen. That's like the big lesson learned for me is just shut up and listen more as much as you can to like understand what it is that you can do to make things better. Like, I think that's like you don't make things better by like performing more. You do it by like, yeah, creating opportunities for other people.
Creating space.
Yeah. I was also just going to say that like you have to be ready to listen, and you have to be ready to listen even if you thought you were doing something good and that did not end up like actually helping the situation.
Can you give me an example of something that might have not gone the way you wanted it to?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like a good concrete one. I think like something we've like, for example, the waiving membership fees for the co-op, that's probably the most like distinct example I can think of something that we have like logistically changed. And I think what we've shifted towards is that like, yes, that's helpful in some context, because by removing an additional barrier to entry, you're just making it easier for performers of color to contribute to your program. But at the same time, you're going to have people of color who want to pay that membership fee because they believe in your, you know, in your process and in your project. And so that's sort of why we've shifted more towards, you know, doing like a scholarship thing where it's like someone can request that if that's something they're interested in, but like we're not going to make the assumption that people of color necessarily need to have a free program just to be involved in it.
Someone said in one of the pre-interviews, and I thought it was I really liked it, and they said we're white men of privilege, and with privilege comes responsibility. Mm-hmm. Was it Dylan? Is that?
I think that might have been me.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. What does that mean to you in terms of the crowd theater?
Yeah. I think about a lot of the times if I would have been able to do what I have been able to do, given if I started out under different circumstances, and I think a lot of the time I would not have been able to create a space like this without the privileges in my life. And because of that, it makes me aware of the space, or I think makes me more aware of the space that I take up, and makes me want to be generous with that too. And I mean, I don't need to do 14 shows a week.
Yeah. And there's like a lot of room for growth in the scene in general, mm-hmm. you know? And I think especially, I mean, I think one of the biggest things is that the three of us not only, you know, are like privileged white men trying to do comedy out here, but it's also that we all went to college and like that's where we have a ton of improv experience, even just coming into the scene in general. Mm-hmm. And I think like, you know, I moved to the city and I probably already knew 80 people who lived out here. I had connections, I had people I could hit up to do shows. Like, it felt very easy and smooth. And I think, like, what I wanted to achieve with this theater is to give that level of access back to people who don't feel like they're connected to the scene. Mm-hmm. And I think people of color in particular often feel, you know, like, just based on a lot of the reactions we've had within the crowd itself, is just like it's easy to feel ostracized in a community and in a theater that doesn't necessarily like think about you or have you in mind with their programming or how they you know interact with people.
Yeah, I think it's like when you're in a position of power, like that's what you can do is recognize it and try and do good with it instead of. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, you can't perform your way out of that issue. Like, white men can't perform to fix the problem like that. So it's like, this is what the work that we can do.
We got to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back after this. A lot of improvisers come from all over the world in the summer to Chicago to study improv. And I just wanted to let you know that I'd love to work with you. I've been doing these Artist Low Comedy Summer Weekend Intensives here in Chicago for about 4 or 5 years, and they always sell out. And I get such a great range of improvisers from all different countries and in the States. I like to always say the States because it makes me sound like I'm so European. But if you're in Chicago on July 27th or 28th or August 10th or August 11th, so it's that weekend, I will be offering only two this summer, the Artist Low Comedy Summer Intensives. It's really about slowing your scene work down so you can find the game easier. Before you can be funny, you need to be real. And really, I want to take the pressure off you from being funny. I really want to take the pressure off you from being funny and just learn to relax a little more. Just like when you're hanging out with friends or you're at a party or, you know, you're in the car and you're just giving each other some shit, how easy it is to be funny. And that's what the Artist Low Comedy is. It's a little more mindful and it's a little more, you know, just a little more organic in your improv. So if you're looking for a new approach to improv, check out July 27th, 28th, my Artist Low Comedy Summer Weekend Intensives, or August 10th through 11th, my Artist Low Comedy Summer Intensives. They're here in Chicago at Stage 773. You can go to my website, jimmycarain.com, to sign up. That's jimmycarain.com.
So Taylor, when you started the theater, one thing you told me before the interview was that that you would talk about what was wrong with the other improv theaters, and that opening the theater was really your way of like, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. Why don't you think more people take these risks of, say, opening an improv theater?
I think for me, like, the big thing was like, I worked at a restaurant called Demo's Pizza in Wrigley, and had some experience there with like running I was like friends with the owner and like was like helping, I don't know, I was doing the books, so I kind of like felt like I had a knowledge of how to run a business, and like just spent time thinking about like what it takes to run a business and thinking about the models that were taking place at other theaters. And I was like, I don't know, in my head it doesn't seem like it's that crazy hard, and like we're not talking about, most of the people that are starting these theaters aren't business people, they're like performers. Like, I mean, Sharna and Dell, like they started the theater as performers, not as business people. So it seemed like it wasn't like a huge barrier to entry, and it didn't seem like it was a super expensive thing. So it was kind of like, all right, let's take the leap and see. And I think also we kind of were like, let's try it out and see how it goes. Like, what's like the worst? I mean, I guess the worst that could happen is that I lose a lot. Like,
did you guys all like kick in $500 or something?
A little bit more than that, but
okay.
I kicked in like two grand, maybe $3,000, somewhere around there. We probably
kicked in less than that.
Okay, Dylan, you want to tell us how much you kicked in?
About $2,100.
Okay, great. So it's about $5,000 or $6,000 to start a theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and something we also did was we just opened a line of credit at Chase and literally just like everything in
just
here.
Just about max it out.
Yeah. Just scan it to the credit card, get the theater up and running, and we'll figure it out in the next year.
Now, Blair, you said something about all of you guys had a lot of experience before you even came to Chicago. Mm-hmm. And when I started out in improv, there wasn't college. We're going back in the 80s because I'm old. There wasn't, people weren't doing it in college. People weren't even doing it, in our high school or grade school like they are now. Mm-hmm. How is it different, like, when you come into Chicago, you've got maybe 7 or 8 years under your belt, and you're like, you know what? I've gotten plenty of stage time. So that's not an incentive anymore. In terms of taking, making a big leap of opening your own theater.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because my assumption when I moved out here, and I assume this is pretty close to like where most people are at, but you like do college improv and you move out to Chicago and you're like taking your like level one class at IO and you're looking around and you're like, I bet I'm the only one in here who's been doing improv for like 5 years. And then like in like 6 months, you realize that like every single person out here, not every single person, but a lot of the people you meet out here are coming from the exact same thing. They were like the one super active person on their college improv team who like was dedicated to moving out, and then they like did it. And I think like, yeah, so like the difference with the scene now is that a lot of people have that experience base coming in to Chicago. But I think what I've realized after opening the crowd is that like none of that guarantees that you're going to be a better performer. I think like there are plenty of people we've had just literally jump on stage for their first co-op show who have like absolutely been hilarious, like immediately. And like, I think if the improv scene did more to focus on, like people when they're first starting off and just being like, you did a show, you're funny, like let's just cultivate the humor that you already sort of like have instead of trying to like sort of pound you into the correct shape of improviser that we want you to be. I think that would be like a lot more helpful for people in terms of like finding their comedic voice.
So let me play the devil's advocate for just a second. In terms of, anybody can perform here, right? In the co-op program. Doesn't matter what if they've been through a program or not.
Mm-hmm.
So what if, the more competitive institutions go, well, you know what? We have kind of a vetting process. People have to audition to get on a Herald team, or they have to be around for a while. We have, we have coaches. They've been through our programs. We're consistently getting a quality product. What would you say to that for the crowd?
I would say, in my experience on a Herald team, that we were not, even like a year in, we're not consistent in giving a good show. Like, and that was like across the board, felt like most Herald teams did not consistently perform that well. And I've seen teams, like certainly there are some shows that are rougher here, but there's also teams that are like composed of people that have never played with each other and like from the get-go just gel and have like really hot shows that consistently. And I think sometimes it's more about like the environment and like the relationship people have and how they feel mm-hmm. when they play than it is about necessarily all the training. Not to say like that you can't like put together a good team, like, and like I think most of the consistent teams have like played together and trained, but I think on average you can get a good team out of random people.
I'd say we have a different product a little bit.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Like I think and I'm not even saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with sort of the hierarchy of like, you have a group of people and they're coached by someone who's been in the theater for a long time. Like, I think that has pros and cons to it. And one of the cons is sometimes you go through all of that stuff and you still don't feel fulfilled as a performer. You've been on a Herald team for 3 years or something and it still doesn't feel like you're doing like good shows. And I think for us, I think absolutely, like with the co-op, it's random groups of people doing shows together who may or may not even know each other, may play in completely, contradictory ways. And we absolutely have shows that are like, lower in quality overall. But I think that's kind of the experience we're trying to go for, is that like we're lowering the barrier to entry, so we're willing to have kind of like a lower average quality, I guess, in order to just have more people here and make people feel comfortable.
And as a producer, can you, with that, is it just basically, you know, for improvisers, the audience as well, can it reach a bigger mainstream audience this way? Or is it just going to be exclusively improv people in the audience?
That's a very big question, and it's such a one that we think about a lot. Getting people to come to improv shows is very hard, whether you are performing at I.O. or CIC or wherever. I think improv is a growing discipline and gaining more mainstream attention, especially like long-form improv, and I think we're going to see more of that with the Del Close Marathon moving to L.A., there's going to be more attention given to it because they're going to get more stars. But I think improv is heading more mainstream, so that'll trickle down. You know, the rising tide lifts all ships type of deal.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, is that, like, the question that theaters in Chicago don't always answer is, like, who are your customers? Because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people assume that, like, the customers for a comedy show obviously the customers for a comedy show are the people paying for the tickets. But for a theater, for an institution, I don't think your customers are always going to be the audience. In a lot of cases, it's the people paying for classes. It's the people paying to be on your house teams. It's, you know, like, the access that you get through, like, going through shows and being a part of the theater. And on top of that, it's the performers and the students who are buying drinks at the mm-hmm. bar for you, you know? And it's like, I think what we're trying to do here is shifting that to be like, okay, well, if comedians are our customers, then why don't we try to focus on their experience instead of sort of using their raw talent to then, you know, shuffle it over to selling that to actual paying customers who are giving us tickets. And it's like, yeah. Oh, I think what we've always focused on is like, yes, we're going to charge you money to like rent out our space to do a show. Yes, we're going to charge you money to be on a co-op team, but we want to give you like as much bang for your buck as possible because the performer is what's important here instead of just like this abstract concept of like, let's make a good experience for the audience.
Outside of, I'm guessing, like main stage at Second City, I think most comedy shows in the city are attendees are going to be performers and their friends, and that's going to be true across almost all the theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think something that we've also like wrangled with is just the idea of like trying to, I mean, I think like we do eventually want to try and get more outside money into so that it isn't just improvisers paying improvisers and kind of like getting an influx of cash into the
because there's
community.
Only so much improv dollar
yeah,
that
exactly.
can go, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so like trying to get more money from outside of the community into it so that, I mean, that's like, that's the issue is like, I think that's the only way that people get paid is if we get more people interested in watching that aren't actively in the community because otherwise it's just people shuffling dollars around.
Bucks.
Yeah.
So what are your challenges? Working, the three of you, you were friends, you put money into the pot, and how do you work out your creative differences? Because I would imagine at the beginning, you know, you're finding your way, I'm sure there was some tension. So how have you been able to negotiate those?
Well, it is a board, so at the end of the day, like, we vote on stuff, I guess, but there haven't been too many really bad
we've conflicts. Had, like, some friction.
Yeah.
The big, for me, it's, like, Dylan's the dreamer, and Blair's, like, the more pragmatist, and it's, early on, it was definitely wrangling that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where does Taylor fit in that?
Mediation.
Mediation. Okay. Happy go lucky.
Levity.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe a little levity, yeah.
So if these two go at it creatively,
yeah.
You're
going to
come in and make a joke and make the piece?
Yeah, or just, like, try and find where the middle ground is to, like, you know, it's like we do have to, we can't spend all of our time planning or else we'll never do anything, but we can't just grip it and rip it and just do whatever idea comes to our head. So it's like just finding the balance of like what's like a good way to continue to move forward while also like being like mindful of what we're doing and does it follow our mission or does it is it practical for our business, like, and just yeah, just trying to find the like, all right, we've got these two extremes. I mean, not that extreme.
Like,
yeah. It's not
extreme.
Like he's insane. Or, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, trying to find like a nice middle ground. And I think we've I think like that role is like gotten less and less because we've found.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's gotten way easier over time. I think it's funny too because like we defined our mission super early on, and it was like let's focus on. You know, I could rattle off the mission statement if I had it, but like, and that was even a recent update to it. So maybe we didn't even really have a written down mission statement, but the idea was always like let's make this. As accessible and affordable for performers as possible, and to like expand the perspectives that are currently represented within comedy. And it's like, I think all of our conversations would always be distilled down to like, okay, in what way can we honor our mission? And then number two was always, how do we stay open? So as long as those two things were like fine, then it was like, the arguments don't really matter because as long as those two things are still happening, then it's like, we can keep pushing forward, we can keep doing what we want to do, and we can keep like the community itself happy with like our efforts in that regard.
And how have you been able to be your administrator, I mean technically your management, you know, let's be honest here, and now you've got to play amongst a team that are your peers, you know, or a friend of yours is coming to do a show and they're, you know, maybe they feel entitled about something and it's not as, you know, so how have you been able to deal with that stuff? Because that's the stuff I think that can be a little tricky sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a value to our theater too, though, is just the idea that we are sort of like peer level management. You know, we are part of the improv scene as much as we are like, you know, running a theater within it. We also, especially when we first started out, it was like we were literally starting a theater so that our friends could come do shows here. And as that like community got wider and wider, it just continued to be something that we're like, yeah, we're running the theater, but we're also going to be like up on stage messing around with people too.
Yeah.
Just being friendly like to people and never like, yeah, just it's like about your attitude going into it. Like you don't have to, as long as you're not like flexing a manager like position on other people, then it wasn't too hard. I think the other thing too is like have the amount of people that have helped build the space themselves, like they feel a sense of ownership so they don't feel beholden to us, because like, you know, we didn't build the stage, like somebody helped us. We didn't paint all the walls, like people helped us. People helped us put the
How did you in. Get people to do that? Because that's a hard thing to ask people to do.
We posted on Facebook. And
is that
came.
Easy?
Yeah,
we literally had
excited,
When we first started out, we had town hall meetings, which were like, we would literally just have a meeting and people could come ask us questions or like tell us what they wanted our theater to be. Mm-hmm. And at one point we like had the floor figured out, we had the walls black, and we were at this town hall meeting and we were kind of like, yeah, so our game plan for the stage is going to be like we're looking into just buying a few like wooden pallets and like staple gunning them together, and we'll figure that out. And this guy Colin David stood up and literally was like, I don't know if he stood up, but he raised his hand or something.
When we make the movie, he'll stand up.
He's like, I used to be a scenic carpenter in college. If you guys need help building a stage, I will absolutely help you. And we were like, yeah, come talk to us after, man. We are 100% going to take you up on that offer. And, you know, he
came.
Yeah, he came. We bought all the materials and, you know, we had all the stuff. And for, what, like 5 days in a row, we were in here until like 2 a.m. with power saws, like cutting this into the right shape. And
had
stuff.
To rent a big saw.
Is that one of your secrets of building this community? Because you guys have a buzz, you know, much like Upstairs Gallery. Is that one of your secrets?
I think so. I think it's like,
yeah,
accepting help and letting people be a part of it, like, and not like having it and doling it out. It's like, we want it to be like open, and when people are excited about a project, we let them do it. Like, if I think that's like another thing is, yeah, just like letting people who are excited about some work do it, and then I think people feel ownership of the crowd rather than like, oh, I do stuff for the crowd. You know, like, it's never for the crowd. They're, like, a part of it.
And no one's ever said, look, I build the stage, so I'd like to sleep here tonight. Is that ever?
Nope. I think it is about maintaining that peer sort of relationship, and something that we've always talked about is, or and has come up in discussion, is when we feel like we're kind of getting away from being peers with the people that are a part of this space, looking to find people that are peers to take our place so that it continues to have that sort of environment here.
For people who are listening to this podcast, they want to start their own theater, what is the most frustrating thing about running your own theater?
Zoning?
Paperwork, zoning, licensing. I would say To figure that out first, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of.
I would also say, like, we've done pretty well. The three of us have figured out a lot of, like, things under the course of this. But I would say, like, having somebody who knew anything about business from, like, day one would have been immensely valuable. So, you know, when you're picking your friends to start a comedy theater with.
Make one of them an attorney that knows business law.
You need one of them an attorney and one of them has an MBA. Like,
we got lucky because I know how to do QuickBooks.
So yeah.
That was like the one like little...
So we had that in the bank.
Small boon.
What about someone who's going to say, you know what, I want to start a theater just like The Crowd because I heard the podcast, and in 2 years I want to quit my day job.
Great.
Good luck.
I mean, yeah.
Because you're not taking any money from this, right?
So what we originally started out was like full volunteer, just like the board worked only on a volunteer basis. And the goal, I mean, the whole goal of the project is to get it to be self-sustainable so that The Crowd can actually pay us or some of us for contributions for our time. And that's like something we're starting pretty soon. But it's taken a while to get there, for sure. And it will probably, I'm trying to think, like, when do you think we'll ever have, like, a full-time employee of The Crowd?
2020, maybe?
Yeah, like, 2 years, 3 years. I think that's, like, a current goal. Like, that's, like, a new, like, oh, this could be a reality. Like, let's put some energy into it.
So what is it going to take for 2020 to have a full-time employee, but what is the business plan? How do you see it growing so it can sustain itself?
So one thing I would take into account also, the business of running an improv theater in incredibly oversaturated Chicago is probably very different than opening up one in Kansas City or Dubuque or something like that where it's a different market. But I think for us, stuff that we're thinking about is, I mean, just looking at, you know, the other theaters in the area and the revenue that they have and the revenue income that they get that we don't. So like touring, classes, workshops. One of the things that we talk about is like streaming, and that's trying to monetize that, broadcasting shows. But just bigger digital footprint in this era, I think.
And then the other thing that we really haven't tapped, despite being a nonprofit, is grants. Mm-hmm. And so, like, looking for external funding and stuff like that. And we're obviously, like, primed for it, and, like, this would be, you know, this would be a good area for us to, like, invest time in. But the, yeah, I think, like, just the day-to-day runnings of the theater have always been a little strapped, so it's always hard to, like, get stuff moving on those fronts.
Explain the financial model, because it's a little different, and I think if people hear this, it may give them some hope that they could finance a theater.
Yeah, so the biggest thing that we did when we first started out was we wanted to release ourselves from being dependent on ticket sales, because we didn't have a lot of faith in our ability to immediately market the theater to an outside community that would be able to fill it up and, you know, make us enough money to, like, stay open, essentially. So what we did is we started with a rental model where essentially you can rent the theater and put up your own show. And so that's kind of what I was talking about earlier with, like, who are your customers. It's like we were aiming more towards the improv community, you know, and being like, hey, we're going to be the cheapest place to rent in the city for performances.
And you're like $60 on the weekdays and $100 on the weekends, which is in Chicago is like nothing.
Like the cheapest.
Yeah. And then the pitch was, if you pay us that amount, then we give you 100% of the box office out, you know, like after we've gotten paid, essentially. And so by doing that, what's nice about doing that right from the get-go is because you are guaranteeing your income to a certain extent. If you can book all of those slots, it doesn't matter how many people come to those shows, and you can kind of take a risk. You're essentially giving the risk to the performers and then allowing yourself to remain relatively safe, because if you book all of those shows, and that was literally how we built our financial model, was like, if we do this every night of the week and can book most of the nights, then we'll break even on rent every month.
But Dylan, how do you do that and still hold on to your identity as a theater? It's because you don't want to be known as just a rental house.
Yeah. So that comes with having some curated programming, which we produce about half of our shows and rent out about half of them. And so if we're looking at the other, like, pillars of our financial model, the co-op is absolutely the backbone of our theater, I think, artistically and as well as financially, because the dues with that help definitely keep the lights on, absolutely. So it's having those artistic shows that kind of represent our identity at the forefront, and that's why they're on the weekends. And
yeah, and also ways. I think also we curate like which shows get slots. You know, like we don't like just say like, all right, boom, 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 and let.
So if I want to get a show up, how do I get a show up?
You can submit from our website.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go right on the site.
Yeah, and then essentially we get a good bit of show submissions and then just fit them into our schedule wherever we're able to. But as we get more and more, it's kind of that's where we can start to be a little bit more picky with, you know, which shows are going to get priority over other shows.
So what do you guys hope now at this point? It's 3 years old. What do you guys hope for the next year?
Continued success with what we're doing. I hope all the projects that we have going continue to grow.
Yeah, it would suck if anything died. So yeah. That's definitely part of it. I think like we're doing a lot of stuff in terms of increasing our online footprint, and a lot of that.
What are you guys doing?
So we revamped our website. For a long time we had a bad website, and now we have a good website, or at least a pretty good website.
It was a great website if you're listening, Art.
Yeah. Yeah. Our original website was just hard for us to edit and
manage.
Yeah, and so now we have one that all of us can actually manage, and that's definitely step one. We're starting to do a little bit more online advertising, kind of dipping our foot into that and trying to see like, oh, is this a viable way to get outside audience, you know, to know about our theater and get in the door. And then the other part is obviously the Twitch streaming, which is definitely more, personally I like this because it's something I don't see a lot of other theaters doing at the moment. And it's cool just to try something sort of a little bit out of the box and see.
What know. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's mostly been a pet project of mine, but I remember being in college and being really into improv and taking, you know, 9-hour road trips up to Chicago to see what improv actually looked like. But now it's easier to get your show to people with live broadcasting than it is to get people to your show. So we have a 3-camera setup in here now with 3 mics, so we can turn those on and then broadcast our show to just our Twitch page. And then all you do is just go to the URL and the show is live. We're working on adding more content to that, but right now we do 2 shows a week, which one is our house team night goes up on Twitch, and then we have a comedy trivia show.
You were going to add something?
No, I was not. But I think it's, I will add something though. I think it's like a newer like form of media. So it's like, yeah, it's fun to be experimenting with what it can do. And like, there's, you know, it adds interactivity to, and it also allows you to reach, I mean, literally as broad an audience as has access to the internet.
So how do you guys find a balance in your life? Because, you know, you've got day jobs, right?
Correct.
And you're spending a lot of time at the theater. You're also performing with the co-op. How do you find that balance?
I think that there's been a lot of
Dylan doesn't. Obviously, Dylan doesn't.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that's been one of the central struggles of the whole time with the crowd. Like, especially just working on a volunteer basis for something that you're like passionate about, it's very hard to maintain that same level of dedication, you know, for an extended period of time, like 3 years.
Because my fear is, if you guys don't end up paying yourself, that eventually you're going to be like, oh, I'm burnt out.
Yeah, I think that's kind of our concern right now, is that we want to make sure that we stay invested in this space, and payment is a big part of that.
Yeah, and like, I think, yeah, paying ourselves is a way to, yeah, like, be like, all right, we're going to put more work into the space and, like, do more things, like, and improve the space. But I think, yeah, like, really, like, in these first 3 years, like, the way that we've managed it is by, like, talking, communicating, be like, this is too much. And I think all three of us have at least at one point been like, I'm overwhelmed by this thing that is in my bucket, and then somebody has taken it over to like relieve them.
Yeah.
And it's been like, I mean, it's taken a long time to get even to a semblance of like, these are my responsibilities.
Yeah. I mean, I think show booking is a great example of one of those tasks that is like just like a little bit more hands-on than most of the other stuff that goes on. And that has changed hands 4 or 5 times
yeah.
over the course. Like, that is the task we're like constantly handing off to each other.
Yeah.
And it's just because, it's a lot of work. And I think like paying ourselves is also sustainable. You know, that's what we want, is to like have a framework built, and especially kind of to Dylan's point about like if we were to ever introduce new people, it's like it would be really hard to introduce new people who are not getting paid. So like if we can create a framework for like this is sort of what you get compensated to help the crowd, you know, stay open and keep the lights on, that allows us to sort of set that as the standard going forward too.
And one of the things that someone said in the pre-interview is like, besides being nominated for an Emmy, do you remember who said that?
Sounds like me.
Yeah, it sounds like I also mentioned it.
Oh, okay. Which I thought was interesting, being nominated versus Taylor not winning the Emmy.
Nomination would be enough, I think.
Nomination is pie in the sky.
Yeah, we can get our foot in the door, yeah.
Okay, but the other thing was to pay performers. And I'm thinking to myself, why is that important to the crowd to eventually pay performers? Now, you told me before you're now paying coaches, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I think UCB, didn't they announce a couple months ago that they were now going to pay coaches?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they heard about what we were doing. And, yeah.
So why in the future would that be important for you guys? I think it's a great idea to pay the performers.
From an artistic perspective, I think it will allow us to have better talent and keep them longer if we are the ones paying for them to do it. Because, I mean, we would... there's so few shows in the city that performers get paid to do. To be on a cast that does that is nice.
But going back to that point about like the improv dollar, you know, mm-hmm. you can't pay improvisers with the improv dollar. You have to pay them with something else, because if you're paying them with that, you're just lowering how much you're actually like bringing in from that same exact group. And we do a lot in terms of like operating within the improv community and kind of trading the money back and forth. And we do pretty well for that, you know? Yeah.
But that's like $800. Not a lot of money.
Oh, no, yeah. Exactly. You know. And that's kind of the thing, is like the next step, especially with the crowd, is just like we need to reach into more pools and like get more outside resources like devoted to this circle, because that's like how you pay people, is if you're bringing in a bunch of money because you have, and that's how all of the theaters in Chicago that pay people do it, you know? Mm-hmm. Second City, IO, all of the shows that have like paid performers also have like ingrained loyal audiences that have nothing to do with the comedy scene beyond just being audience members.
And I think payment opens up the door for people to spend more time and do more adventurous things. Like when you take it from like, when you have paid gigs, it's like you can take it from being a hobby to, or something you do like to pass time, you know, like into something that's, you know, a fully committed and like more adventurous thing, you know? People mm-hmm. can take more risks and like do more intricate and exciting things because they have that mental space, I guess.
Well, my hope for you guys is that you get pay yourself and get to pay the performers. I think that would be great, and that you hang you hang in because it's, you know, as you know, it's not easy, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah,
it can be a grind for sure.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I think we're gonna do it. I think before the end of next year, we'll be like at least along the way. Like, we have plans even in October.
Are you having fun doing this? Now, I'm a guy who doesn't know how to have fun, but are you having fun doing this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What's fun about it?
I like working with these guys.
What do you like about working with those guys?
Oh, gosh. Well, this kind of goes back to something earlier that we touched on. Blair and I specifically kind of have opposite perspectives on things, and Taylor's kind of in the middle. But I love seeing what the three of us come up with together, because it's always better than what any of us, I think, would individually bring to the table. But it is just a very pleasant work experience apart from that, and we have a lot of good bits.
Yeah. A lot of just like a relaxed environment a lot of the time. I think every once in a while we have a particularly stressful situation, and either that comes from within or that comes from without, and they're much more stressful when they come from outside of us. Yeah. It's just like, it's an enjoyable experience, and it's also like we get to be a part of this community where like we set the standard that people were going to be like friendly and open and, you know, like try to be as inclusive as possible. And by doing that, we have just like invited a bunch of like friendly, nice people into our theater on a consistent basis.
Yeah, this has like been a number of times where it's just like had like really beautiful moments with people like sending emails or like about how they like how the crowd has like affected their experience in Chicago or like, and like, I've definitely cried a couple times and like been mm-hmm. moved by like what people say.
What was something that someone said that moved you?
I think we had got an email from somebody who said that they might not have done improv anymore, but they like felt comfortable performing here, and like that permitted them to like continue to play, and like that person like is awesome now. Like they're doing like incredible stuff, and it was like very moving to have them like also like let us in on that.
Yeah, like, I remember last Christmas some of the community pulled together money and gave us all checks and rose cards, which was...
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
So individually or to the theater?
To us individually.
Oh, my God. And what did they say in the card?
Well, that's private.
Okay.
Just like
a lot of nice stuff. Yeah. I'm just like reading it on my couch, like crying while I was doing it.
Oh, yeah.
it's been a very like... We've been super lucky because the people who have decided to spend their time here are just very like beautiful, giving people, and it's cheesy, but like there is absolutely an aspect of working for the crowd that you get paid back in like appreciation a lot of the time.
I didn't even ask. How did you come up with the name The Crowd?
You
brought it in. Well,
what's the significance of it?
It felt like it would be if you're at the theater, you're a part of it. You're a part of the crowd. And that's kind of the vibe that we wanted. It was like, it's very easy to become a part of this thing, and that's just...
So I'm now a part of the crowd.
Yeah,
technically.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We got to end this. We always end the same way. We like to ask one, we'll ask each of you, what one piece of advice would you give someone starting out in improv today?
Just one?
We'll start with you, Taylor.
I think my piece of advice is, like, if you're going through classes and stuff, this is something that it took me a while to learn, is, like, that... Not everything that they say is necessarily like, you know, you don't have to take it literally like that you have to do it, because you'll run into coaches with different styles. Like I had Craig Euler and Jason Schatz, and their styles can be more different. And like, it's more about taking those things and having a list of tools that you can use and creating your own style from that rather than saying like what he says is true and what he says is true and what she says is true. It's like sometimes they're not congruent. So you have to like create your own voice from the lessons that you learn from different people.
I would say my biggest piece of advice would just be to secure your own life first and get yourself in a comfortable place before you like reach out and like start committing to a billion different things. It's just like really easy to move out here, not really get a job you like, be doing something you really aren't enjoying, and then try to like find yourself in doing like six nights of comedy a week. And I really do think like you gotta understand that like if you were just doing comedy on nights and weekends, then you are spending so much time doing stuff you don't like. So just like, and this is gonna sound fucking boring as hell, but like get a day job that you don't mind. Get a day job you fucking like, because you're probably gonna be doing it for a little while out in Chicago. Yeah. Getting paid to do comedy is like something that takes a lot of work and dedication, and you can't do it if you're burnt out because you hate your job every single night.
Dylan?
I would say you're not gonna find your voice listening to somebody else's, so do the work that interests you. Find a project that you're passionate about and devote time to that. And I'm gonna go in the exact opposite direction of Blair, which is typical me.
I love this because I get to feel the tension.
Yeah.
I get to, it's kind of like backstage of the creative tension. Taylor, you can jump, you know, you can,
don't worry.
Yeah, I've always taken the route of not giving myself another option than comedy, so that I have to make this work. And so if you wanna make it in comedy, don't give yourself any other options.
Well,
what he's saying is burn your bridges behind you. What Blair's saying is make sure you're comfortable. Hey, you know what? You have to listen to yourself and say, my advice actually applies to this. Maybe that's the way you do it. Maybe that's the way you do it. Take your pick.
Yeah.
I think we just saw an insight on how it works with you guys in administration.
Yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
Taylor buttons it all up, recaps it, and puts it together. Dylan Cassidy, Blair Britt, and Taylor Jones, thank you so much for being our guest and inviting us in the Crowd Theater here in Chicago, and happy anniversary when we run this. Okay, there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. I want to thank our guests, Blair Britt, Dylan Cassidy, and Taylor Jones, for being our guests, and also the Crowd Theater for hosting us for this interview.
For more information about the Crowd Theater, go to their website, thecrowdtheater.com. That's thecrowdtheater.com. I'd also like to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. Also, like us on Facebook, our Improv Nerd Facebook page, because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Follow us on Twitter, improv_nerd. And we are also on Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Jimmy Corain. So please follow us on Instagram as well. I think that's it. I want to thank you. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run. There is a